Hello, everyone, and welcome to Thrifters Villa, a podcast for resellers and entrepreneurs. I'm Daniela, and I have Lori here with me, but I have a question. Lori.
Hit me. Yes.
True or false? We have never made a mistake while reselling.
I mean, obviously this is false.
You would assume so.
Obviously. Actually, I meant to say obviously true. I was going to be funny and say.
It's okay, Lori. It's still funny.
Yeah, obviously false. We've made plenty of mistakes through the years while reselling, and we want to sit down and chat with you all about the mistakes we've made and how we've used these errors as learning experiences to grow from them.
This or continue to do them, one or the other.
Yes, we said, that was such a bad idea, and I'm going to do the same thing tomorrow.
Over and over and over again. Glutton for punishment. But I think like this is... Maybe if you're newer and you're listening to this, you're like, oh, I feel like I keep making the same mistakes. And why do I keep doing this? And why do I keep picking up this certain brand or this certain style? Or this has a hole in it again. Like, we all do it. All of us. Mm-hmm. All the time. And there's various reasons why it can happen. And I think it'll be fun to kind of go through these different scenarios that we've come up with and talk them out. And maybe someone will resonate with all of you.
I think it might. No, in yes. I mean, oh my gosh. I think I did four of these today.
So true. So true. All right, first one we have is buying items at the thrift store with rips, stains, tears, even after you reviewed the item numerous times before leaving. True, happens all the time. All the time.
True. Ding, ding, ding.
I even feel like it happens more so, well, it happens when I'm in a rush, because it's always going to happen when you're in a rush. Or you're so confident. I do this sometimes and it's so bad. I'm like so confident that the item is in perfect condition because I like did a once over and I'm like, oh, it's fine. It doesn't have any holes in it. Like it's good to go. Or it's new with tags. Why would I have anything wrong with it? Mm-hmm. And then I get it home and I inspect it and I'm like, probably should have looked under the sleeve, or I should have looked at the hem a little bit better. I just think
what about the power of suggestion when you just want it to be perfect?
Oh yeah.
So bad.
Because of the brand.
Because it's a brand. And because you just, I saw a Lauren Moffitt jacket today for $4. If it didn't say Lauren Moffitt on it, I would have, is it Lauren or Laura? I think it's Lauren.
Lauren, I think.
It's Lauren Moffitt. And if it didn't say that, I would have been like, this jacket is so disgusting. But I like looked at it for a long time. Like, I think I could shave this mountain of pill off of the underarm area and get that stain out. But like, yeah, sometimes it's the power of suggestion, just like wanting a brand to be okay.
Because it's even the lighting sometimes in certain places, like sometimes, especially now that it's getting darker out earlier. And now you're just relying on the light within the store, which isn't always the best. So I know sometimes in the summertime, what I do is I take my carriage and I go closer to the window and I like look in the sunlight at certain items to kind of get a better idea of what it will look like. Cause sometimes when you're in the store.
We shop together in that one store and we go to that one section that has the good lighting. We just bring our things over there. We're like, we'll meet in the spot.
And you know that it's nice and bright there so you can look, but generally it's not LED bulbs everywhere, you know, and.
Wouldn't that be so nice? That'd be so nice.
It would be, but that's not the case. maybe in the future.
Yeah. I will say that rushing is the number one reason for me why I miss things. The number one reason.
I sometimes feel like I can repair everything in the world because of the brand that I have in my hand. And then I have to like do a reality check and like, I'll put it in my cart and everything. And then at the end, I have to really like look at myself in the mirror and be like, but seriously, can you really repair this? Is this really worth it? Even though it's a really great brand. I'm not someone that upcycles. If I upcycled, maybe, but I don't. So I struggle.
And I don't even think the question is, can you repair it? Because I'm sure the answer to that is yes. I'm sure.
Do I want to repair it?
Do you want to? Like, are you really going to make the time? And I feel like it took me probably 18 months of picking up flawed items because they were a good price. And so I'm at the point now, like sometimes I look at my drafts that haven't gone live. I'll be like, why didn't I list that? And I'll say, oh, because it has a little hole there. And now I'm just like, well, screw it. Just list it, Lori, and price it accordingly. Mm-hmm. But I think when I catch myself, like I'll take the photographs and I'll be halfway through a draft sometimes before I even see the flaw. And what I'll do now is just like, just take a picture of that flaw and list it. Like, don't look at, because I think that's where I went wrong for me personally, because I wouldn't fix things. I had that red Dynasty jacket, the sequins, it's a piece that I think could be worth quite a bit that I recently found. It's a jacket. I think somebody wrote in my comments that women in the Chinese culture wear it for their wedding day. It's like a red, okay. It has a dragon.
Yeah.
So somebody said, you know, that is not a hard fix. Like, you could go get some sequins and you could hand stitch that, and it really wouldn't be hard to do. I like choked on my morning coffee. I'm like,
you want me to do what?
I would, I mean, and I believe that person, you know, I could probably take a few hours, and this is the type of piece that maybe the return would be amazing, but I would be more likely to bring it to somebody to repair it. Like, I have a wool J. Crew jacket that they've probably donated by now at the cleaners that I had, you know, they fixed a couple buttons and because I thought that was worth repairing. Mm-hmm. I had a Burberry coat that I picked up that had one little stain, and I brought it to the dry cleaners because that was worth repairing. Right. And so those types of things, I don't even mess with myself, and I will still pick them up if they're that good.
Yeah, I agree. I had a pair of Chanel boots that I found, my first pair of Chanel boots I ever found. This is like my first year reselling. Didn't know what to do with them because they needed a new heel. Like, they needed a new sole. They were beat up. They were $3.99. I couldn't pass them up regardless because they were $3.99. I could have made my money back either way. Like, but at the time I was so new. I went to the cobbler and I probably spent like $35 to get everything fixed. They fixed the suede. They fixed everything. But I sold them for $1.99 because they were like a really vintage, like, it took a really special person to pick them up. Mm-hmm. And that was worth it to me. I would probably still do that today, but I tend to pass on a lot of that now. I tend to just kind of like, all right, I know it's a really great brand. Maybe someone else wants to put the time and invest the time into it, but I just can't.
Yeah. And I mean, gosh, I respect those people that do take the time and mm-hmm. like bring these things back to life. I think it's mm-hmm. wonderful. And I feel like there was a time where I was hopeful I would, or I would put more effort into things. Yeah. And I think as you move further along, and if you start dipping your toes into other things like multiple platforms or, you know, social media or just other things that kind of take your time, mm-hmm. you'll realize really quickly that time is money. You know, you're almost better off just like redonating and picking up another piece to list that will take you 5 minutes to list.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Good one. Okay, next one. Purchased items at the thrift store that you swore you would never purchase.
To resell again.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
True. I think everything's going to be true.
Yeah, absolutely do that. And I think a good example of that, I just talked about this in my recent video of like my Bolo brands, but they're not like what you would anticipate a Bolo brand to be. Like, they're just very generic mall brands that I have really good luck with and the styles that I do really well with. And one of them in there that I mentioned was Anthropologie, but it's specifically Pilcro and the letterpress and like their overalls or their utility jumpsuits, like that kind of stuff. So yes, I have sworn up and down I'll never pick up Anthropologie, but I always have an exception to that rule. And that's one of my exceptions. Or it's a really interesting, fun piece and the price is right. And it's in a brand that I say I'll never, like, this brand doesn't do well for me. I'm not going to pick it up. I'll get it just for that reason. Like, okay, I know it's a brand that I tend to struggle with, but this piece is really unique and I think I can do a really good job flipping it, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think this is where our personalities come into play, because I think you're more black and white than me. So I feel like you've probably sworn off a lot more brands than I have.
Yeah.
And so I mean, there are certain things that, so I think my rule of thumb now is if I have it sitting in my inventory right now, like I just passed on a pair and I think it was in a thrift with me of Fit Flops. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think Fit Flops are sexy shoes or anything. Like, I don't like
they're a comfort shoe.
They're comfort shoes. They sell. And they're kind of like the dance goes of the world. Like, I can flip them for $35, $40. It's consistent. Mm-hmm. Don't get excited about them, but I pick them up. Anyways, I have like, and Jack Rogers is another example. The classic Jack Rogers shoes, they sell better in the summer. You know, if they're in really good condition, they'll sell. But then a lot of Jack Rogers sits for me.
Yeah, I agree.
But what I do now is if I have a couple in my inventory already and they're sitting, I'll leave them behind. But once that item sells, I would probably pick up another one and kind of replace it. But it's not something I would buy multiples of. Like, I think you and I probably have multiple pairs of Madewell and Levi's high-rise jeans. And it's like, you just keep buying them. You just keep buying them. You don't even, I don't, I'm not even keeping track of how many are in my inventory.
Too many.
I
probably should. There are too many.
But so that's an example of like a brand or like, you know, Patagonia Cinchilla. You know, I'm not going to be like, oh, I have one in stock and it's not moving. I'm not going to buy that. I would do it for a base layer, Patagonia, or like, I don't buy a lot of Patagonia dresses or things like that, but a Patagonia Cinchilla, I'd have 10 of them in my closet if I could for the right price. But then there are those certain brands that if I have one or two and they're not moving and I'm not excited about them as it is, I would pass on them.
Yeah. I agree with that too. I think some, I like the analogy that you use of like restocking. I think that's a great way of thinking of it. Like, okay, it's a replenishable basically. Like this is something that I know is going to flip. I don't want to have a ton of it, but I can easily replenish it and kind of have that customer flow coming back.
Yeah. Like the black dance goes, those are just something that I feel like I always have some version. Sometimes they're patent leather. Sometimes they're matte black. Sometimes they're Sanitas, but I always feel like I have a pair of black clogs in my closet in some size. And yeah, so I try to tap the brakes a little bit if I've been buying a lot and they haven't been moving. So, but yeah, I mean, I sold a pair of Old Navy pajama pants the other day. I mean, they're like basically disposable and you know, you can get them on Black Friday for $3.
I was gonna say, Black Friday's coming.
It's like I got, they were like white with like a smocked waist and like pineapples. I'm like, these are kind of cute. And I picked them up at the bins and they sold for $15. So like, I don't really think I have a brand that I just would, I mean, I don't know.
I think it all depends on where we are in our business in terms of styles that we're selling. I think that has a lot to do with it. Like where are we at with-
Sworn off Alfred Dunner there, I said it.
Okay,
I
won't buy Alfred Dunner. That's a good one to swear off, so.
But you'd be surprised.
That's like swearing off Casper. Yeah.
Yeah, Casper. I have Casper in my closet.
Doesn't surprise me.
Casper with a K. Yeah, so I'm not good. I'm not good at swearing anything off, but I see, I know exactly what you're saying. And I, speaking of Pilcro and the letterpress and, you know,
don't buy the jeans,
Cartonier blazers.
Yeah.
You know, if I see 20 of them, I might pick up one of those.
Maybe. Yeah. Pilcro and the letterpress jeans. I've learned the hard way. They just don't.
And they're so damn cute too. They're so damn cute.
But they don't move, but their overalls or their utility jumpsuit or like the painter type smocked things, those do so well. Cause it's a very, it's something that I think resonates with a lot of the trends that are going, that are out there right now. Overalls are big again, you know, all that.
I don't even think the brand really matters for overalls.
Right. But I think because it's Anthropology, it kind of has
a little bit of a boost. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why I make it an exception. Yeah. But otherwise, I'm trying to be better about allowing things into my closet, not necessarily because of brand. Brand, of course, is always helpful, no matter what. But I'm trying to be more open to it. But then I feel like I don't want to fall into the trap where like I'm picking up things. All, you know what I mean? Like I don't want to fall.
Your strategy has worked for you, Daniela. I think that's how you keep your closet lean and profitable.
Yeah, I try. Next up, shoes that required too much rehab that you thought you could handle.
Oh my gosh.
Guilty as charged. Like, oh God. I'll never forget when I went to the bins. This was, I think, right before. It was before we went to Maine. So it was pre-pandemic, December, November, in that range. And there was just a pile of boots with dirt everywhere. But they were Sorel. And one of them was UGG. And I was like, they were leather. They were like leather UGG boots and leather Sorel wedge boots. It's like, I'm getting them. Covered in mud, covered in dirt, got them, didn't want to clean them for like a month and a half because it's disgusting. I didn't want to do it.
Plain and simple. So it was just dirt, but they were otherwise good?
Yeah. They needed some work. The leather was scuffed. It needed a little rehab. Then I picked up another pair of, I don't remember what the brand was, but like the heel was coming up. Like I thought I could fix it on my own. I thought I could take it to the cobbler and it'd be an easy fix. Ended up being like a $25 thing. And at that point, it wasn't worth it anymore to me. And I've been there. I've done it. Yeah. I've also picked up sneakers that I thought I could clean. And I cleaned them over and over and over again and ended up not being able to get them
Like a canvas or like a nylon material. Yeah. Or leather.
These were nylon. They were sneakers. They were nylon. Like running and sneakers. I thought I'd be able to do it. And I just, and a lot of it came out, but I just, they were beyond anything else I could do. I soaked them for 24 hours, nothing. But I feel like shoes, so let's reference our discussion with Ryan and Lindsay last week. I feel like shoes is something that you typically can clean and, you know, you can turn a good profit on them. But like they say, some things just with experience learn.
Ryan's advice was, you know, all of the work should be done upfront before you leave the store with them.
Yeah.
Like you analyze everything, you twist the, you know, you do all the little tests before you go to ensure that you're not going to have the work on the other side.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I thought was really great advice. Yeah. I've been burned on Birkenstocks.
Ooh.
Because they can just be so nasty because I know my Birkenstocks like
they're nasty.
The cork is breaking now and my toes are like, those toe marks are never coming out. I mean, and I know there are ways to get it out, but like, I've bought a few pairs of Birks with like the bottoms are coming off and I'm just like, but they're Birkenstocks, you know? And I mean, they kind of still do sell.
They do.
Do I really want these nasty shoes in my closet? Like when someone's like scrolling through to like, look at these.
Look at these Birkenstocks that are just covered in black soot everywhere.
Somebody did buy a pair of Birks for me though. And when I went to send them, I realized that the whole sole was detached from the leather. Mm-hmm. So I messaged them and I'm like, I can't send these to you. Like I just noticed the thing. And she's like, oh, don't worry. I'm replacing the entire footbed. Like I'm just buying it for the leather on top. I'm just send them. I'm like, okay, I love you.
Just put them in the mail today. Just buy new ones.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I don't know
if it was a discontinued leather or something that they had or a color or something like that. And she really wanted it. I did that with a pair of Doc Martens too. They were pretty bad. And I fixed them up the best that I could, but it was like the sole was all destroyed. But I was still able to sell them for like $40, $45. So I guess some people just don't care. I don't know.
Yeah, you just get lucky sometimes.
But shoes can require a lot of time for rehab. So can handbags. So like if you're going to rehab and you're going to go down that route, you know, kind of take the advice that Ryan and Lindsay gave last week. If you listen to the episode, and if not, you should listen to it because it was really good. They're super knowledgeable. You know, do the work beforehand. Mm-hmm. Look at it, twist it, bend it, do all that kind of stuff, and kind of go from there. Remember the advice we used to give that we don't do anymore ourselves, or we probably should do. I don't know. Maybe you still do it, but carrying the Tide pen with you to make sure that things would come out. Like that was advice we used to give a couple years ago.
Yeah, I never do. Who's our friend?
Mira
does Mira it. She's
told us that.
She has her Doc Martin. She has a kit. And like in between rotations, she literally sits there and like cleans stuff, tries to get stains out of things. And then, you know,
makes her decision.
And if she keeps it, she's already ahead of the game because she's already like polished shoes and brilliant.
Smart, I think it's man.
Brilliant. Yeah. I love it.
All right, next up, we have picked up a designer or luxury piece because of the brand name, even though the piece wasn't exciting. And then there's a second part to this too, which is an item that was a designer or luxury piece that was damaged in some manner, which kind of goes, it can go hand in hand sometimes.
It can. Either the style's not there or the condition isn't there.
I've done it.
Oh God, yes. I mean, luckily, I feel like now I've been doing it maybe even more so because now we have the real. And sometimes they'll take some of these brands that I wouldn't sell on my own, but I'm like, oh, well, the real will sell it. So
I'm so guilty of doing that. I'm like, this is the most boring button up white blouse, but the real will take it. So I'm going to get it. And it's going to cost me $2. So sure. You know,
and even if you make 16, if you're just putting it in a box,
don't care. It's extra money. You know, that's the way I look at it. When I look at the real, it's like, it's an extra stream of income. My buying cost is minimal, or it's a buy that I should have never made in the first place. Or it's not moving on my own. And at least I'll get something
cost already. Like you've already made the mistake. You know, we were just talking before we went live about, you know, pieces that I've had sitting in my Poshmark closet for a while, good name brands, like the Salvatore Ferragamo bags that I found and the vintage YSL belt. And I'm pulling them, you know, just cause they're just not moving. So
yeah.
And the cool thing, I just got some stuff back Like I got a Diane von Furstenberg lace dress that just won't leave.
Diane von Furstenberg and this is this trouble they that we have.
I couldn't sell it. Yeah. I'll be back today. But the cool thing is it was something I had already listed. So instead of deleting it, I just marked it not for sale. Mm-hmm. And so then I just rebooted it today. So it can sit for another 6 months. And
we'll also see. Guilty to do that with Tory Burch. Why do I continue to buy Tory Burch pieces? Why do I do it to myself? Shoes, handbags, different story. Clothes, I should have learned my lesson already on that. It's really hard to move Tory Burch clothing. It is really, really hard.
I have some really cool pieces too. Like I have this black Tory Burch silk. It's black and then it has leopard sleeves or it's leopard Ooh. With black sleeves. It's some sort of really cool combo. And then it's got like the black like beading around the collar, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like that Y2K beading that was a big deal. Like you can see it on like J. Crew shirts. But it's still, there's like a lot going for it. Not moving. And Fontaine, not moving. Like no. I have certain brands that I was so excited to find and they just are very cozy in my closet.
They're just hanging out. I have a great example of picking up a luxury piece that was damaged, but I still picked it up, but I upcycled it. So there was a Chanel cashmere cardigan that I found at Savers. And it's my first piece of Chanel clothing that I've ever found. I found Chanel boots. I've found, you know, shoes. I've never found a handbag. I wish. Found a fake one, not a real one. But I've never found clothing. So I was so excited because I could tell immediately it was real just by the feel, the tag, everything. It had all the things going for it. It was wool and cashmere. So now I'm looking at it. It's like, there's got to be something wrong with it. There's no way this has been sitting on the rack all day because it was like 4 p.m. And it was like in the rack. So I start looking at it and it had holes, moth holes everywhere. But I couldn't leave it behind because it was my first Chanel clothing piece that I found. And it was cashmere and wool. And I was like, I'm going to find something to do with this. God damn it, it's the last thing I do. Like, I'm going to find something to do with this thing. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to find a way to use it. So I contacted a friend who sews, and I said, can you make this into a scarf? Like, can we use this material and make it into a scarf? So it's like an infinity scarf kind of thing. I haven't worn it yet. She kept like the border of the thing. It still has buttons on it. And I have like the other buttons that were on it too. And I'm like, all right. I mean, it's an upcycled piece now. And I was like, maybe I could send this to the Real Real. Cause I kept the tags and everything on it. I was like, keep the tags, like sew the tags in. And, because I don't know what I'm going to do with this. And I'm curious. I'm going to reach out to my rep. And I'm going to say to her after I wear it a couple of times and be like, hey, I have this Chanel upcycled piece. Would you guys even be interested in it? And kind of go from there. And if not, I might sell it on my own or keep it, right? One or the other. But I could not, I paid $13.99 for a damaged Chanel cashmere cardigan.
I would have done the same thing.
Leave that.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think Chanel, there's an exception.
Yes.
Tory Burch is not Chanel.
No.
No, I mean, like, I would have picked it up too. Or like, I love, I've been looking on Etsy to go with my new Louis Vuitton planner. Like they have accessories on Etsy and people will upcycle old Louis Vuitton canvas bags and make bookmarks and make headbands. Right. And it's great what people can do with the stuff. And it's the real thing. They're just, you know, using it in a different way. I think it's so cool.
Yeah. That's my one story. Where I came home and I was like, Matt, I paid $13.99 for a broken Chanel cashmere sweater. And he was like,
she's broken.
She's broken. Well, why'd you get her?
Not broken. She's bent, like Pink would say.
It's Chanel. You don't leave Chanel behind.
Exactly. All right. Next up, felt pressured to buy something while outsourcing just because you haven't had any luck. Oh God, finding anything you consider worth it. Did this yesterday.
Yeah. I try so hard not to do this, but like, it's that feeling of, I just drove here. I just spent time walking around. I have nothing in my cart and now I'm going to walk out.
I'll tell you what I bought yesterday. Cause I did this yesterday.
Tell me your experience.
I went back to my honey hole that is dying a fast death. Like I keep going back thinking it's going to get better.
I hear it keeps getting worse.
It's getting worse by the hour. And it honestly, like, I have to look at everything different now. I've sourced a new place today, which was good. But I went back because they had their price increase. So I said, maybe when they put the prices up, maybe they're backstocking some of their inventory and they're like holding out on some of the good stuff to put out when the prices go up. Like if I was a business owner, that would make sense to me.
Right.
Because the crazy thing is they've cleared it out so much. Like to walk around, the experience is great, but the inventory just is not there. Right. It's just not there. And I don't know what's happening to it, because there was a part of me that was like, well, maybe they're pulling all the good brands and they're like selling them on Poshmark or something like that. But right. No, like because they're still marking things up. They still had like the Prada shoes that were in the case.
They were still there.
They were still there. They were marked to $49.99. I didn't buy them still, but they were like $100 the week before. But anyways,
they might go to $19.99. So just wait.
Yeah. Maybe next week they'll be $19.99. Then I'd buy them. But you know what I'm saying? Like you would think that if they were outsourcing, that would be a perfect example of something they would, you know, and then they
right, have the they Calvin would pull Klein and they would sell.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But they still have like the Calvin Klein marked up and like the, you know, Mosimo new with tag for $15. So it's still weird stuff like that. But anyways, so the prices didn't go up too much. Like the sweatshirts used to be $3.99. Now they're $4.99.
Okay.
Leggings, $4.99. Everything basically went up $1. Shoes are still $4.99. They didn't go up in shoes. So I was like, great. Anyway, I got a pair of SoulCycle leggings.
You were desperate. They said real desperate.
They said Boston. So I'm like, well, that's kind of cool. But they had some cracking. And I was just like, that's how. And then I bought a pair of Aloe leggings, which might as well be SoulCycle for me lately. And they were like an older style, like they were black, like the ones that almost look like you're wearing like thigh high, like.
Oh, yeah.
They're kind of
like the ballet style of a legging.
Yeah, where they come all the way up and it was like royal blue and then like black at the top, like, and they were $5 each. And as I was checking out, I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Yeah. But it was one of those days. Like I used to leave this place and spend $300. I used to leave with trash bags, like just, and then I'm like, is it me? Am I getting more picky?
No.
I mean, yes, but no, like, it's so bad. It's actually like impacting my daily functioning. Like it's upset me so much. Now listen, I feel like when everyone's like, I don't have places like that around me. And I'm like, neither do I.
I don't have anything anymore. No, but I mean, I experienced that with you last time we were together and that was a rough day. and it almost felt like we were trying to find something to pick up those days. It was like, could we just drove around to numerous stores? One we had really good luck in, but like the other ones was just like, okay, there's nothing here. Okay, I'm getting one thing. Okay, I'm going to get this one. Yeah. You know, like I have 20% off. Okay. Like
so I guess there was a part of me, I guess my reasoning, because I think we all experienced this. So I think my reasoning yesterday was, you know, a year ago, I would have priced these at $45 or $55 for SoulCycle and, SoulCycle used to be good pre-pandemic before Peloton took over the world.
I'll say Peloton. Oh, I have a story about Peloton, but keep going.
People loved theirs. I mean, I did well with SoulCycle prior to the pandemic. And in Aloe, same thing. Like what I said to myself when I was buying them, I'm like, they're $5 each. I just have to manage expectations. I will be happy if these sell for $25 and I make 20 and triple my money. Like instead of going home and thinking I'm going to list them like north of $50, which I would have a year and a half ago. So
got to think about, again, referencing Ryan, what he said last week, $25, just price it at $25.
I'm telling you, I can't tell you the number of offers I've taken this week. I had a pair of Ben Sherman boots that I had priced at $50. The comps were all over the place. Ben Sherman's like one of those brands, like it can do well, but they were just really nice looking boots. Like it's like my first time picking up Ben Sherman boots. I had them listed at 50 and someone offered me $30 and I looked to see what I paid for my paid eight. I'm like, Ryan and Lindsay would take it. Yes, and then I was like, it's still, you know, $30. That means 24. That's triple my money. That's not a bad return. Mm-hmm. So I took it. So I was very proud of myself.
Very good, Lori.
I was very proud. There's been a lot of that. And I just had a conversation with one of my good friends and she said that she has kind of let go of obsessing over the ASP. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I am just selling so much stuff and I'm making more money than I've ever made because I'm just moving through stuff so quickly. And I was telling her the story about the $25 shoe. And she's like, yeah, I've just entirely let go of it. Like, you know, she does most of her shopping in the bins though, like 95% of her shopping. So the bins, it's really easy to do that. But it's interesting. It's very liberating to just say yes sometimes. Like today I've had pretty much a yes day. I've counted on a couple of things, but I've pretty much said yes to everything that came through today. And it's been a good day, you know? So like if you get like three offers and it's like a $25 offer, a $30 offer, I haven't countered yet, but had a Rami. No, I did counter. I lied. I have a Rami Brooks dress, another brand that I thought
should do really well and doesn't.
Should do really well. And I had it priced at 80, so very high, but they offered me 30. I countered at 64, but then I was like, you know what? I could have just had a $30 sale. You know, you say no to three or four offers. And then all of a sudden it's like, I could add $100 in sales today. Instead, now I have none. Sometimes.
I know. It's changing your mindset about
it. We don't have crystal balls to know.
And we don't know what's going to happen. So two things I want to talk about. One, Peloton. I recently found a Peloton half zip type thing. It had like the little logo on the side and it had like a star underneath it. Anyway, listed it for $45, sold outright within 24 hours, full asking price, no questions asked. It had a ton of likes on it. Also have a SoulCycle pair of leggings that I couldn't get rid of to save my life for 7 months that I got an offer of $25 on and took it because it's been sitting forever. So I was so excited to find those SoulCycle leggings. I had never found them before.
I used to get so excited about SoulCycle, and it used to move for me. It used to do very well. But yeah, that's interesting. And now, I mean, the Peloton community has just grown so much through the pandemic. So
the other brand, go ahead.
Go. I was just going to say, when I first got my Peloton, you have like the credit, you can share your, and then you get $100 in apparel. Like you don't get money
as
a kickback, but if somebody gets your Peloton, if they buy a Peloton. So I had a bunch of credits and there were certain pieces that once they were released on the Peloton site would sell out really fast. And they always do collabs. Like they'll do stuff with Nike. They'll do stuff with Lululemon. They'll do stuff with Beyond Yoga, whatever, different brands that they collab with, but certain pieces would really fly even on their website. So once those sold out, you knew for sure that was going to show up on Poshmark and be big money. And it was, so you may have had one of those pieces.
Yeah,
that was possible. Just like, you know, something that moved really fast. But what are you going to say?
Another brand that I see in the athletic wear section that's starting to go on the decline, which makes me really sad because I used to be really excited about this brand last year. Outdoor Voices.
Outdoor Voices. Oh, God.
On the decline, like so fast.
Really, that was just like a hot minute. Yeah, I was just excited. I just recently picked up a pair of Outdoor Voices.
Me too. A week ago.
And then when I got home, I'm like, damn it. I basically have these in a different shade of blue and they're not moving.
Yep. I have three pairs now and I have officially put the mark of you're just not picking them up anymore. You can't, because unless they're like a dollar, well, then that's a different story. But like if I'm paying $6, $7, $8,
But then it comes back to the Apple and the SoulCycle, like, would you pick them up for $5 and sell them for $30 or $35? I don't have a problem with that. Like $30, I would sell things for $30 all day long. People know that about. So I think that's what I need to do. I think what I should do.
Manage expectations.
And specifically when it comes to workout gear, I feel like I need to go back in and to all my listings before the new year and like relist, like refresh them a little bit and either drop the price first and then delist and relist for the new year. But I have a ton of athletic wear that really could use a good going over.
Yeah, me too. My athletic bin is overflowing, which I felt like wasn't the case last year or the year before. So I need to revisit what's in there and kind of do an image. Like the brand Coral is another one that used to do really well. Doesn't really do great anymore. I don't pick up onesie anymore, but I have, I think, one piece left. I'm probably just going to send to ThredUp. That brand doesn't do well anymore. Athleta, I struggle with Athleta pieces unless it's new at Tag or I feel like their sweaters, their hoodies, like that stuff does really well, but their leggings, the tennis skirts do really well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of that.
Yeah. And it's just, we've been doing this for a little bit now. And so things that were exciting in 2018, when I started, it's just Patagonia slowed down quite a bit for me.
I know. Ooh, fun fact. I was in a Plato's Closet, not the one here in Rhode Island. I was in one in Mass. I don't remember which one I was at, but I was in one in Massachusetts. And they had a list in their fitting room, because I was trying something on for myself, and they had like a list on the wall of all the brands that it must have been for their employees, that they are looking for in like what category they fall into. And the brands on that list, I think it was like the outdoor stuff, was Patagonia, mm-hmm. L.L. Bean, Woolrich, which I thought was interesting. And it said underneath that, like anything that's vintage wool, like that. And I thought that was interesting that like brands that we kind of struggle with sometimes, they're actually looking for those things.
Yeah.
So I guess if like you're a bin shopper and you come across that stuff often.
Which you do in New Hampshire, Woolrich, L.L. Bean, maybe not Patagonia so much, but I see a lot of Woolrich. I like Woolrich a lot.
I have a Woolrich. Here's another example. I was excited to find Woolrich, and it was like a nice piece. It's a nice wool coat, and it has like an Aztec pattern to it. I can't move it to save my life. And I don't know why.
Is it
maybe I need to manage my expectations and lower the price.
Yeah. I have a Woolrich like down parka that I got in my honey hole back when it was good. And I think I paid $7.99 for it. And it's literally on their website for like, it's like a version of this coat that they repeatedly come out with every year. And it's like a $500 coat. I have it priced at $2.99. We'll see. It's a men's extra small. It's in.
But you could label that as women's too.
Yeah. I don't know though. I mean, it says men's, and I think the zipper's on the other side for men's.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, a zipper's only one-sided, Lori. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of buttons. It's late. Be nice.
I'm not saying anything.
No, I know.
The listeners are saying something, not me. Don't judge me.
Zipper's on the other side. Okay, Lori, let's move on to the
moving next on. focused on brand, way too much instead of categories, fabric, content, or style. I think everyone's guilty of this in some capacity, but I think the more seasoned you get in reselling, you tend to bypass brands sometimes when the fabric content or the style or the category, you know, from experience does well. I feel like this is something you learn with time with reselling.
What popped into my mind when you said that, I had an instance, like I love to pick up Victoria's Secret Gold Label and there was a robe at Savers. It was in really nice condition. It was Gold Label, but it was priced at $9.99, which is high. And
kind of high. Yeah.
Kind of high. I mean,
not crazy high, but kind of high.
Not crazy. Yeah. I probably had a coupon. It was probably $8. So I was like, meh. And it was in good shape, but I looked at it, it was polyester. And I said, if this were silk, I would have paid the $8 for it, but it was polyester. So I passed. I mean, could I have made money on that? Probably 35, $40, maybe more like 30, 35. But if it were silk, I would have grabbed it and I left it behind because it was polyester. But like some people might not mind the polyester because you can wash it and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily a con, but that's definitely an example of a time where I passed because of the fabric content.
I would say when it comes to fabric content, another category would be like handbags. So I love picking up Fossil handbags, but I won't pick up their cloth. Like I won't pick those up. I will pick up leather, but I won't pick up cloth. And you could say the same about certain shoes. You know, if it's an all leather shoe, I'm probably going to go for it. And it's a really cool style. Or even, all right, I love Everlane, but I'm not going to pick up every Everlane piece. But if it's an alpaca or a crew neck, alpaca or the cashmere, I'm probably going to grab it over the cotton V-neck sweater that's probably stretched out. And even though it's Everlane, I'm probably going to pass on it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. What was I thrifting today? And I was really torn because it was a J. Crew black sweater from holiday of 2019. And it was trimmed in white and it was merino wool and alpaca. It was a combo, but it just kind of had that look like maybe it had been washed or something, and where it was an extra small already. And you know, the black, it's like, you know, you see every piece of lint on it. And it just honestly looked like it was going to be about 10 minutes too much work for me.
Right.
And it was $7. So again, I would have definitely grabbed it at the bins. But yeah, I was like, nah, I don't want to delint you. Even though it was a pretty sweater. It was nice.
This is where shopping at consignment stores gets fun, because you don't have to worry so much about all this kind of stuff. Like, shopping in thrift stores is obviously what we love to do. But when you shop at a consignment store, and I've learned from experience, is like all of these like second guesses or these things that we're talking about right now, you generally don't have these same conversations because someone has already done all of this for you. And you're just walking through and picking up what you like.
That's really nice. That is a huge pro.
It is.
Huge time saver.
Yeah, you're going to pay a little bit more, but the quality is different. It's better, and the brand is typically better, so you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. Is everything worth it in a consignment store? No, there are plenty of things that are not worth it, but it's just a different shopping experience. So I feel like it depends on where you are, too. You have different conversations with yourself when it comes to brand and price and quality and all that stuff.
And it's always interesting at consignment stores, too, because the other store that we like, that is a little higher priced, you'll go through the rack and they will have a Calvin Klein sweater that's really in beautiful condition, and they'll have it priced at $14. And then right next to it, it's priced at $16, but it's an Everlane alpaca. So you'd say yes to one, even though it's $2 more, and no to the other one, even though it's in beautiful condition and it's a current style and stuff like that. But then just certain brands, or you're flipping through, and same thing can happen with like a pair of denim, where, you know, they might mark not your daughter's jeans, and it's a beautiful pair of jeans and it's in really good condition. And, but they'll have it priced the same as, you know, insert pair of jeans you're excited to find. So it's interesting, you know?
It is. And it depends on the place that you go. I mean, all this stuff, it depends on where you're at. But for the most part, I feel like we've both evolved from just looking at brands. Like, brands are important to an extent, because there's a bottom line that we both want to hit money-wise, right, within our business, no matter what. But there's also those aspects of, like, just having fun with the process and looking at the other aspects of the item, not just the brand. You'll get there if you're not there yet. Just takes time.
If you want to get there. I mean, yeah, some people anyway, like, you know, that's like, fine. Like I was at the bins. I just, the haul that I just had, I had a Vince Camuto sweater, which normally wouldn't pick it up, but it was really pretty. It was like a mauve. It was ribbed, and, you know, somebody sent an offer for $28 on day one. And then today a Land's End shirt sold for $25, which I thought I was going to keep for myself. And it was a little big, and I thought it was still cute. So, like, the two brands that I would have 100% passed on in a regular thrift store were like two of the first things to sell.
Go figure.
It's so weird. It's so weird. There's just no rhyme or reason sometimes.
There really isn't. There really isn't. Next is ignored all aspects of analytical data. Yeah, I don't like looking at data. I like looking at it, but I don't like to actually acknowledge the data that's there sometimes, because it means I have to do something else with my business that I don't want to do, because I'm a creature of habit, right? I mean, we all struggle with this. This is a tough one. I mean, analytical data can be anything as much as how much we've spent. And this is the next one, spent more than you initially budgeted for the week or the month. Yeah, this can absolutely happen. Different situations come up.
A budget, no.
What is a budget, please? But it's true, like, Lori, when you had your buyout, were you anticipating and spending $250 on bags of stuff that week?
No.
That wasn't planned.
No. Yeah. Sometimes you get these incredible opportunities I'm not sure. Like, I eyeballed it. I'm like, should be able to make my money back with a few of these things, but you're still not sure.
Yeah. I've definitely gone to a thrift store and been like, oh my God, I need to buy everything right now. It's going to cost me $500.
Things come in waves, you know, like, I feel like I've been struggling right now, and I'm spending more time going out and getting less stuff. And then there'll be times where I'm like, leave it in the car, because I've just found so many good things. I can't bring in another bag right now. I can't admit to myself that I've done this much shopping in this short time, you know?
And everyone's budget is different, you know, and sometimes you hit the bins at the right time. If you're a bin shopper and it's like, oh my God, it's been so good, like, the last few days, I need to keep going. And then it all adds up. I mean, especially the bins, because your buy cost is lower, but you're getting way more than if you were going into a thrift store. So, you know, I think I know I personally have done this where I'm like, okay, I'm only going to spend X amount of money because I want to save for X, Y, and Z. And these are the things that I have planned. And then something happens. I end up somewhere and I find something amazing. And I'm like, well, there goes that budget I had planned because I want that.
Yeah.
I need to sell that.
In general, I think it's a profession that you really have to work on being disciplined. I'm not a very disciplined person. Regardless of the aspect of my life. But yeah, so I struggle. I have a hard time saying no to pizza and you know, margaritas.
Pizza.
And I
pizza
have
pizza and beer. Time. Come on.
Yeah, I'm not the poster child for discipline. Definitely not.
I think it's important to look at data. I'm gonna throw that out there. It is important to look at it. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to review it and know where you're at. And I think having honest conversations with yourself when you are spending too much and like really sitting down and looking at it and be like, all right, you went a little overboard. Like maybe the next week you don't thrift because you don't need to thrift every week. We love to do it, right? But you don't need to go through all the stuff that you have and then analyze from there, make a few sales, get things out the door and then, go back from there. Hard to do. Easier said than done.
I kind of say this about comps, like you're never going to look at your data and be like, damn, I wish I didn't do that. Like you usually learn a little something, like no matter what it is, like, oh, I didn't realize my ASP was that high, or, oh, I didn't realize I spent that much money, or, oh, I didn't know this brand did so well last month. Like, I feel like no matter what, and now Poshmark has a little bit of that data.
Which is nice. It's a little skewed, but it's good. Like I was just looking the other day, let me pull it up right now. I sold that, Saloni, how do you say that brand? S-A-L-O-N-I.
Not familiar.
Well, it's like a designer, whatever. And it was all sequence. And I sold it for $200. I paid $40 at TJ Maxx and I sold it for $200. Well, of course, when I look at my analytics, Saloni, S-A-L-O-N-I. It's my number one brand apparently sold. And it's like, well, yeah, I've sold one piece and it was $200. So it outweighs everything else. So like, I think it's, and this is with any analytics that you look at, it's going to be skewed. I think it's just looking at it, understanding, at least we have something to reference and be like, okay, yep, this brand is up there every month. This brand's up there every month, you know.
What are your top three brands,
Danielle? Madewell, Zara, and Free People. I'm not counting the dress that I sold because that's number one.
Oh, right.
So Madewell, Zara, Free People, Levi's, which is pretty in line with what I pick up.
Yeah. Yep.
And then if I go by average sale price, Zara is number one. And that's because I focus so much time on learning Zara. So what you put in is what you're going to get out of it. You know, what you spend the most time on researching and learning and focusing on whatever it is, you're going to see it in your data if it's working for your business anyway.
Yeah.
And if it's not working, you're going to see it.
Yeah. So data is, it's always good to check
it out. It's a pain in the butt, but you need to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a good one, Lori. Ignore a pile of clothes that requires attention, steaming, cleaning, listing, and deciding to go outsourcing instead. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. All the time. Yeah. Well, it's that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio, like skipping down the street. And it's like,
my God, what is that?
Running to the thrift store when I have a pile of clothes, like sitting at home. Yeah.
It's all nicely on my rack. It's there. At least it's organized. I haven't gone though. I went to the thrift store on Saturday because Matt and I were out and he was so nice and said, do you want to go to a thrift store? And I said, of course I want to go to a thrift store. Thank you very much for offering. And he sat in the car and I went around and it was a really great, most of the stuff that I picked up, I've already listed and, or I've put in a box into the reel. So it was an easy trip, but I have no business thrifting at all this week or next week. I need to get through all the stuff that I have, but it's requiring willpower.
It's hard. Yeah.
Especially with the end of the year coming, people start donating their things now, Lori.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I have not been feeling that. I've been feeling like, well, today was a good day, but I feel like the past few trips. I mean, the bins turned out to be better than I thought. Like when I went home, I'm like, this wasn't a great trip, but then it ended up being pretty decent. And I haven't been feeling like that. Ooh, this influx of stuff. I think I'm waiting for January on that.
Yeah. I feel like December, middle, end of December, February, I feel like is the best because they're getting through everything and it's all going out on the floor.
When I don't thrift in February.
Maybe we That's change so the month, Lori.
Yeah, really, really. Maybe it should be if it was January. I feel like January is for me as a person donating, I have all my kids home in the month of December. They get all their stuff for Christmas. Mm-hmm. They go through all their stuff and then they just put bags in my room or they put them in the hallway. They wait for the maid, me, AKA me, to walk around.
AKA mom.
So I feel like, and then in January, like when we take down the Christmas tree and it's just that like freshen in your house, like when you want all the clutter gone, I feel like that's, but like you said, maybe they're just not processing it as fast. I find good stuff in January, I think.
Yeah, I find good things in January too. I feel like December, January, February. I feel like my best sales are generally February. Like February, July, and like November for whatever reason are like have been typically the months that I do better in. I don't know.
I don't think I have any rhyme or reason with mine. I feel like my best months are the months that I
put the most work into it.
Yeah. Determined to sell a bunch of stuff. I send out a million offers. I put it, you know, buy one, get one free. Like those are the months that I do best. It just depends on where I decide to do those. But
yeah.
It's nice to have control in that way, you know, if you need to.
Yeah. I think in terms of that aspect of ignoring the pile of clothes, we all do it. I think it's just knowing how to manage that pile and what you're bringing in. I think just like we said before, having the honest conversation with yourself is important. Yeah. If you're like sitting there and you're like, there's way too fast. Yeah.
Honestly, it's like eating. It's like, you know, I could diet all week and make really good choices and I could blow it on one day and have like, you know, 6,000 calories a day. It's like I've undone like all this work. And it's similar. Like you could be pretty diligent and list like 5 to 10 items a day. And, you know, you're working. I mean, I think 5 items is pretty reasonable, but I feel good if I'm listing 5 items a day.
Me too.
But I mean, you figure, and then by the end of the week, that's 35 new listings. And then you can go to the bins and buy 50 pounds worth of stuff. And you're back to square one. And then some, you can have more than 35 items, you know, so you can really undo it very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to shop than it is to clean, list, measure, package, inventory, you know what I mean? So it's not a one for one, you know, because it's just a lot more work on the back end than it is on the buying end. So.
Yeah. And I think realizing maybe where your strengths and your weaknesses lie with that too, like easy for me to shop, definitely a strength when it comes to being a reseller, keeping up with the back end stuff. I struggle with, I try to be good about it. Like I'm good about sending out things and sending them off to the real world and all that. But then it's like the other back end stuff, like keeping up with the spreadsheet and organizing my tote and not just throwing it in a tote because I don't want to deal with it kind of thing, you know, like that stuff, which then in the end it ends up being way more work for me than if I just had a system in place and took care of it.
You want to know what my new death pile is right now? It's really sad. Mm-hmm. It's no longer like unlisted stuff like that comes home and goes in a pile. It's stuff that either I or Caitlin, my assistant, has taken pictures of, done the measurements of, but we haven't gotten it to a draft. Like before we had the system in place where we would always go directly to Vendu. So they're just on my camera somewhere. And then for a while, the system was she wrote it down on paper and I wrote it down on paper, like what the measurements were. And I even saved all those papers, but they're loose leaf paper with a measurement attached to a photograph that could have been taken in June. That's somewhere on my camera. And now I have this pile of clothes that I haven't yet put into my inventory because they're not really accounted for. Like if I look them up, they're not listed on Poshmark. So now I'm having to go back through this pile of clothes that 90% of it has been photographed already, like a waste of time. Like I paid somebody.
And I gotta do it over again.
Well, or I have to find the picture before I bag it and put it in my inventory. So it's like this post photograph and draft death pile. So now we've revamped the system now that like basically like she, you know, one of us either takes the picture, drafts it, then it gets inventoried much faster. But you know, it's taken me a long time to figure out that system. And now I'm like having to go back through all these other things. But then once I get through that.
Well, now you have a new system in place that's going to work for you. for now.
And I have a feeling it's going to keep getting, like, I'm chipping away at it, but I have a feeling it will take me until like Thriftless February to actually dig in. And this time, February last year is when I redid my inventory system, and it's taken me a year to like still, you know,
work. It's not an easy thing. I think inventory systems is one of the things that I wish I would have had in place beforehand, but the space that I was in didn't really allow for it. So
how is it now with more space?
So I have the same exact amount of totes. I haven't outgrown the totes that I have, and I have a better, so I have all my shoe totes in one section. They're all piled together. I have two handbag totes. They're all together. And then my clothes, I have three jean totes, and then the rest of them are just kind of like a hodgepodge of all things put together. There's no real room. I have one that's like a new tag tote. Mm-hmm. But now I'm going to, my plan is after the holidays, probably, take a couple of days out of work, and I'm going to buy different totes and use these for something else in the house, probably use them for like Christmas decorations or whatever, bigger totes. And, so consolidate the totes down, have longer totes, and then organize it the way that I want to. So I'm thinking like all sweaters will probably go, I don't think I'm gonna do by size or anything, but everything will have an allocated number. Everything will have an allocated tote that it'll go in, and it'll be inventoried somewhere in a system, right, in a spreadsheet. And so it'll be easier for me to find. But as of right now, I mean, it's so much better for me to find stuff. It doesn't take me long because I have all my shoe totes together, and I don't have a ton of inventory where it's still easy for me to find things. So like, even though I don't have a number system or anything, I only have right now, I have 482 items, still manageable for me, because I had 600 in the apartment at one point. So I can manage it. It takes me maybe 10 minutes to find things now. Where before it would take me like an hour to find all the stuff I need to find, because it just wasn't any system at all. So building a system, but not quite there yet.
Yeah, it takes time. It really does take time. This was my contribution to our list today. Passed on a reasonable offer because you thought it was worth more, in quotes, only to sit on it for months.
Yeah, I'm currently going through this right now. So I should just lower the price of this item. I have a Wilfred, so the Aritzia brand Wilfred. It is a cashmere cardigan. It's like a chunky knit, oversized, like totally something that's trending right now. It's currently on their website. I think I have it listed at like $85, something ridiculous, but I keep getting offers of $35 and $40. So I think I just need to take the hint and list it at $35 or $40 and just sell it.
Yeah, but there's
I've passed on four offers. Four.
There's a lot of room between $35 and $85.
Like, yeah, what if you talk, I know. I've seen the comps are like between $50 and $70, but I also like I need to do more research in terms of when were those comps really from? And was this a piece that maybe they've reissued throughout the years? Like, I haven't really done that research on it. It retails for like one and change, like 135, 140, something like that.
I don't know. That's a tough one. I had a Wilfred sweater, same thing. It was current. It was in their store and it got mad attention, and I got a lot of offers on it. And, it depends. Like how long has it been listed? It might end up selling in like a high price. It was good.
It's been like 10 months and I've relisted it twice.
Oh God. Then Daniela, drop that price.
Yeah.
I would say. Well, I mean,
but I paid up for it. Here's the thing. My buy cost for it was $15, which is much higher than what my usual buy. And it's not a ton, but it's still like I paid 15. So
okay.
For me to sell it at 40. Yeah. I mean, I can do it. I'd still make something, but I'd like to sell it for like that 55, 60 range. And I feel like the brand and the style and the content of the piece warrants at least a $55 price, but clearly I'm wrong.
Well, no, you're not. I mean, sometimes it's just, if you're willing to be a long tail seller, I mean, you'll find the right buyer. I had something recently that had been in my inventory forever and ended up selling like over $100. And I was like, wow, like I would have never expected that. I don't even know what the piece was, but I could have easily dropped that price a long time ago. For me, I'm just like oblivious. I feel like you pay closer attention if you're relisting, you know what I mean? So I feel like you have more of an idea, like you on the pulse of like what's going on with a brand, you know?
Yeah. And I just think sometimes I'm really stubborn and don't want a piece to go for less money. And sometimes it works in my favor and I wait and the right buyer comes along.
Right.
But sometimes it's like, okay, but then I think of my husband in the back of my head, like, just move every piece that you have. Just
move. That is like, Jay's voice never goes away. That's all he says. And it's like, it's a rhetorical question. I'll be like, babe, I got this thing and I paid blah, blah, blah. And I just got an offer for this.
Like,
why do you even ask me? Why do you even ask me? Take the money. You know what? I'm going to say the same thing every single time. Yep. You're going to make a little money. Take the money because you're going to go thrifting tomorrow. He's so funny. Yeah. Why do I ask?
Same conversation.
Same.
The only time he says no, if it's like something ridiculous and he's like, well, how much did you pay? And I'm like, well, this is how much I paid. You know, sometimes he says to counter, but for the most part, he's like, just made the money. Do you ever look at like in Poshmark where it shows you like the dollar amount of what's listed in your closet? Do you ever look at that? And you're like, if I could only make that, like if I could just liquidate everything and even make half of that right now, that'd be great. Yes.
I know. Think about it that way.
And in our conversation with Ryan and Lindsay, I think kind of made me think about it a little bit more. And this conversation makes me think about it where I'm sitting here like reflecting on all the things that I still do to this day. And I'm like, maybe I just need to be better on my outlook on certain things.
Yeah. I just sold, while we were talking, a Lilly Pulitzer cashmere sweater for $26
that
I bought
so
at the bin. I know. I bought it at the bins. I listed it for $60. It had a teeny tiny hole in the back that I actually did repair.
Ooh.
And I stitched it and I showed that I had repaired it. But it still had a hole in it. You know what I mean? Even though I had repaired it. So then I'm like, 64 is a little much. So then whatever. I finally dropped it to $40 and I got an offer for 20. And then I looked to see what I paid for it. And I saw that I had paid $2, which is usually an indication that I got it at the bins or at the pit or someplace. So then I'm like, actually, if I sold it for 20, I would actually make money, decent money on this as far as like, you know. So I countered at 32 and then they came back at 26. I'm like, just go. But I mean, this is a piece that when I first got it, I'm like, this is, and it wasn't typical Lily. It was a cream colored.
Ooh, like, so it was, yeah.
Cashmere. It had like fringe on one side. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted it.
So sad. There's another broom we can add to the list. Decline.
Oh God.
We have a whole decline episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really good. All right. Well, those were our mistakes. Hope you enjoyed.
Take those offers.
Yeah. Take offers. Reflect on what you're doing. I mean, when we have these conversations, it always makes us reflect and like realize what it is that we're doing every day and what we could probably get better with. And I think heading into maybe the new year, these are things that you want to look at and maybe make changes or maybe don't make any changes. I mean, whatever, if it's working for you, it's working for you. But I definitely think going into the new year, when it comes to pricing, maybe change my outlook and my perspective on certain things and certain brands, and maybe still pick up those ones that I know are not going to have a high return like they once did, but it will still bring people to my closet that maybe will bundle or maybe will come back and buy something else from me, you know? So conversations to have with yourself.
Always changing. Our closets are always changing. Everything's always changing. One last thing I want to say. If you look on your Closet Insights, on the new stats, they have like a pie graph.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
They show you what percentage of your items have sold on offers to likers.
Let me see. Mine's probably really high.
Oh, mine's enormously high. That's kind of my point.
100% right now for the month of November.
Oh, are you kidding? Oh, is it just
100%. Oh. Well, right now it says.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's really interesting. Okay.
100%.
So
yeah,
current month. So for me, 73.3%.
Yep. Mine is 100% have been offers to likers. And that just shows what kind of month I've had too. This month has not been great.
But I do feel like we do send a lot of offers and I think
we do.
I mean, I know us, you and I, and I feel like we price on the higher side.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
And one of the things that Ryan was saying about how he priced things was just, you know, there's really no room for debate. If I'm listing these shoes that I know somebody could flip for $50 and I'm listing them for $25, I'm going to feel very confident about not dipping, you know, like not taking offers, and people are probably going to have more sense of urgency to buy because it's such a good price. And then I go and I take my profit and I buy new ones.
It's so true. I just changed it to the past 12 months 87.9% of my sales this year have been offers.
Yeah.
8.4% is buy it now, and 3.64% is bundle. I really don't have a lot of bundles, but 87% of my business is offers. Now, okay, is that attributed to Posture VA? Probably. Probably a portion of that's contributed to Posture VA and the 10% offers I send out, which then starts a conversation, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that has something to do with it. But then I also tend to, like, my discount or my sale is me sending out another offer with like 30% off or whatever it is.
Right. That's
basically what I mark up.
So, like, I think that if you, you know, either
take away the 30% markup.
I also firmly believe that even if I price something for $5, somebody would offer me three.
Oh yeah. That's just the way Poshmark is, no matter what, any platform.
So I wonder, I'd be curious, like, on eBay, I have a lot more just outright offers.
Right.
Or people sending me offers. So I have on the year, 70% are offers, 10.53% are buy it nows, 17% bundles, and a bundle buy it now, 1%. Oh, that's where they bundle and just buy it.
And they just bought it.
Love those people. Let me just put a bunch in a thing and then just press pay.
Please do that all the time. What has been your highest month for the year in terms of sales? It shows you at the top. These analytics are kind of cool, guys. If you haven't like dived into it, there's actually, it's not bad.
Not what I would ever expect. March.
Mine's August.
August, yeah.
And I don't know why. Oh, all the Levi's products that I bought was during that time. And that kind of jump-started my closet. I found a bunch of like new attack stuff. That makes sense. Yeah, mine's August and January. No, August, July, and then January.
So far, mine's March, and then looks like October and June are tied, and September is higher than both of them. And February is my lowest month because of
mine too.
So I was going through old inventory. So I wasn't stocking with a lot of new stuff. So that makes sense. And it also makes sense why I did almost $6,000 in March, because I probably like did so much shopping in the month of March. And I was like lifting my heart out with all new merchandise that made people happy. So
this month is not looking too good for me right now, but that could change. Month is still young. It's only the 16th.
Yeah. You know, I feel like just November, December aren't usually my best months because people are Christmas shopping, you know?
I'm definitely Christmas shopping for myself. So I'm definitely going to retail stores for myself. How could I not? Deals are too good.
I know the deals are great. The deals are great. All right, everybody. This was a fun episode. Thanks for those questions, Daniela. That was great. All right, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful week.
Yes.
Next time. We'll talk to you soon, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. This is just a reminder that Thrifters Villa's Patreon is officially live. You can find us on patreon.com/Thrifters Villa. It is just $5 a month, where we're going to offer you bonus content, extra episodes, a free downloadable a month, and live events. So make sure to check us out there, and we will see you next week.